Welcome to the Museum of Discovery and Science and the Florida Ecoscapes Exhibit Audio Tour, sponsored by the Florida Division of Forestry. This tour will guide you through the Ecoscapes Exhibit as we follow the natural flow of water through Florida and the hydrologic cycle, which is the natural process of the sun evaporating water from the ocean, transforming it into water vapor, forming rain clouds that rain fresh water down onto land, where it slowly then returns to the oceans by way of rivers, lakes, streams, and through the Everglades to begin the process all over again. As we explore the different ecosystems of Florida, try to imagine yourself as a drop of water as you take this audio tour, and we will explain where in the hydrologic cycle you are as we proceed. To begin the tour, stand at the entrance of the Ecoscapes exhibit. You are now a drop of water in the ocean's waves that are splashing onto our beaches.
Every year, millions of people flock to South Florida to enjoy our beautiful beaches and pristine oceans. These beaches are home to a unique ecosystem often referred to as dunes and maritime forests. Native plants such as sea oats grow on the dunes near the water's edge and help protect the shoreline from erosion, while over 22 species of other plants inhabit maritime forests found on stable dunes slightly more inland. With exotic plants such as the Australian pine introduced to our beaches decades ago, taking up valuable space and other resources, many of these dunes and maritime forests have lost much of the native sea oats and plants that inhabit them due to this intruding pine tree species. There are many projects being implemented along our beaches to remove the exotic Australian pines to return this ecosystem to its natural state and make room for the native species of plants. Over 70% of our planet is covered in water. 98% of that water is salt water found in our oceans. The remaining 2% of water is fresh water, with only 1% of that being usable for human consumption. The warm, shallow waters off of our coast provide just the right environment for coral reefs to exist and thrive.
To get an up-close view of these reefs, you can either go diving yourself or simply proceed to the first set of aquariums on your right-hand side. This is the museum's Living Atlantic Coral Reef exhibit, sponsored by Carnival Cruise Lines. Within these aquariums, there are thousands of tiny little animals known as coral polyps, all growing together to form what is known as a coral reef. As the polyps grow and die, their remaining limestone skeletons form the foundation for future polyps to grow upon, which, over time, slowly builds large, rock-like structures which form the foundation for expanding these coral reefs. The limestone that actually forms the state of Florida was all created by, and once was, living coral reefs. All right, my little drop of water, please continue into the Ecoscapes Grotto and you'll notice a shark tank to your left-hand side.
Sharks are actually fish, but unlike other fish, the shark has only one true bone in its body, the jawbone. The rest of the shark's skeleton is made up of cartilage, which is the same material that gives your nose and ears their shape. Sharks are an important part of the ocean's food chain and control fish population as they feed. There is concern in the scientific community due to the fact that sharks are on the decline globally, which could have a significant impact on ocean ecology. The two types of sharks most commonly on display in this aquarium are the nurse shark and the spiny dogfish, which is the most common shark found in the sea. Now that you've enjoyed seeing some sharks, proceed straight ahead towards our artificial reef tank. Or, since you're a drop of seawater at the moment, let's flow over the artificial reef tank.
In the museum's artificial reef tank, you will notice a display of an ongoing effort in marine science known as a designed artificial reef. Designed artificial reefs, such as the reef balls found in this tank, are man-made structures designed with several goals in mind. Over 500,000 reef balls and artificial reef modules have been deployed in more than 3,500 artificial reef projects in 48 countries worldwide, making reef balls the most widely used designed artificial reef in the world. Reef balls are used primarily to restore ailing coral reefs and to create new sites for scuba diving or fishing enthusiasts, but there are many other uses such as beach protection, mitigation, fresh water, education, and for creating many types of aquatic reef systems. Please proceed, or flow, around the corner to the right.
The tank on your right, before you begin to head up to the staircase, contains some of the different species of schooling fish that inhabit our local waters. Fish swim in schools to confuse and scare large predators and make it difficult for them to separate a single fish from the group as prey. You'll notice that no matter how close the fish swim to one another, they don't bump into each other. This is because fish have lateral lines of sensors along the sides of their body. These lateral lines pick up vibrations from nearby fish. Schooling fish use information from their lateral lines, vision, and sense of smell to synchronize movements and quickly change shape or direction to fool predators. Now venture halfway up the staircase to your left and look into the small aquarium on your right.
The fish in this tank are known as blind cave tetra. These fish, along with many other subterranean organisms, inhabit the many underground aquifers and cave systems we have throughout the state of Florida. Living in total darkness, the blind cave tetra aren't just blind, they actually have no eyes at all. They can sense their way through the darkness, relying on vibrations in the water, and also rely on those vibrations to locate their food. Aquifers are underground rocks that hold water. Florida's fresh water supply comes from three aquifers: the Floridian Aquifer, the Intermediate Aquifer, and the Surficial Aquifer. The Floridian Aquifer is one of the most productive aquifers in the world. It underlies 100,000 square miles, covering all of Florida and southern portions of Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. Most of our water, up to 2.5 billion gallons a day, comes from this aquifer. As the water is used up, the Floridian Aquifer is recharged by rainfall that seeps into the ground and trickles through the sand and clay, eventually recharging its reservoirs. The major source of fresh water for some of the counties in northwest Florida is the Surficial Aquifer, which is made up of mostly sand and gravel. There's another Surficial Aquifer found in southeast Florida called the Biscayne Aquifer, which is the main source of fresh water for Dade and Broward counties. The Intermediate Aquifer can be found in the western part of South Florida. It lies between the Surficial Aquifers and the Floridian Aquifer and supplies fresh water to Sarasota, Charlotte, and Glades counties. These aquifers, filtering and storing our rainwater, are essential to us in South Florida due to the fact that the state of Florida is actually split into two separate land masses hydrologically. There's a line crossing the peninsula from Cedar Key on the Gulf Coast to New Smyrna Beach on the Atlantic Coast, known as the Hydrologic Divide. Northern Florida receives water from outside the state through groundwater and surface flow, moving from higher topographical elevations in the north towards lower elevations south. But south of the Hydrologic Divide, Florida is an island as far as freshwater is concerned. We in South Florida solely depend on rainfall for freshwater reserves, including the water that is stored in and recharges our aquifers.
The rainfall we receive in South Florida comes from the sun's heat evaporating water from the Everglades, Atlantic Ocean, and Gulf of Mexico into water vapor gas. The salt in seawater is way too heavy to be evaporated with water and remains in the oceans, which is why rain is fresh water, even though it comes from the salty ocean initially. This water vapor that is formed creates clouds and thunderstorms that then move over land and give us fresh, pure water through precipitation or rain. Since you are now being evaporated into the sky due to the sun's heat, don't forget that you're a drop of water during this tour. Please ascend to the top of the stairway and look to your right. But remember, as you are evaporated, you will leave your salt behind and transform into water vapor gas.
You are now looking into the museum's bat cave. The bats at the museum are Egyptian fruit bats, and although they aren't native to South Florida, there are many species of bats that call Florida home. Just like the blind cave tetra, bats have to deal with living most of their lives in darkness. They do still have eyes, but they don't really need them due to a unique method of hunting and flying in the dark known as echolocation. Using echolocation, bats emit a high-frequency sound wave that bounces off of walls and prey that they may encounter within a cave or dark environment. When the sound bounces or echoes off of a surface, bats can determine how close or far away they are from that object. Dolphins also use echolocation to locate food under the sand at the bottom of the ocean that they cannot detect with their eyes.
Behind you, you will notice several other animals represented in our hardwood hammock area, most notably the Florida black bear. This area represents the inland flora and fauna that relies so heavily on rain for their freshwater supply. the hardwood hammock ecosystem is comprised of small islands of hardwood trees found on ground that's slightly higher than the surrounding landscape. These areas rarely flood or burn, and vegetation is thick with more than 150 species of trees and plants calling the hammocks home, including beautiful, rare bromeliads and orchids. The hardwood hammocks also provide critical habitat for mammals, including the endangered Florida panther. Those plants in turn produce food for herbivores or plant-eating animals. These herbivorous animals then become a food source for larger carnivores, which eat other animals higher up in the food chain. The Florida black bear is interesting because, like humans, it's an omnivore. An omnivore eats both plants and foliage, as well as meat from prey animals. These plants and trees receiving the fresh water at this stage in the hydrologic cycle also create oxygen through photosynthesis, while removing the greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, from our atmosphere. Now, become a raindrop and proceed down, or precipitate, down to the other stairwell, and turn to your right.
This area is known as the museum's gopher tortoise burrow. As you can see, there are many other animals that inhabit the burrows created by these tortoises. The gopher tortoises provide these animals a home underground, which is much safer than being exposed to the many predators these animals have above ground. With gopher tortoises listed as an endangered species due to human encroachment, their animal roommates are facing losing their safe habitat and potentially becoming endangered or extinct species as well. This is why the gopher tortoise is a vital member of South Florida's ecology and is known as a keystone species. Many other animals rely on the support of this tortoise, much like a building relies on the support of its foundation or keystones. Now, please exit the gopher tortoise burrow and stay to your left.
In the hydrologic cycle, fresh water that isn't used by animals or plants immediately collects and runs off in the forms of lakes, rivers, streams, and the Everglades. As you proceed and look to your left-hand side, the entire rear portion of our Ecoscapes exhibit is dedicated to those animals that live and thrive in and around these rivers, lakes, streams, and the massive Florida Everglades. As you explore, you will notice several amazing species of freshwater fish, frogs, toads, and other amphibians, and of course the many aquatic reptiles that call these environments home. You will notice our turtle exhibits containing several species of turtles, such as the yellow-bellied slider, noted for its bright, solid yellow underside that is native to South Florida. The red-eared slider, which is not native, but is considered an introduced species due to mainly its overuse in the pet trade. And you will also see a large alligator snapping turtle in the enclosure to the left of the large open turtle tank. Looking almost prehistoric, the alligator snapping turtle will sit motionless for days or even weeks at a time, lying at the bottom of a shallow waterway. It will lie with its mouth wide open, wiggling its worm-like tongue to attract fish. Once an unlucky fish is fooled by the tongue of the snapping turtle, it will attempt to eat the worm and will actually become dinner itself for the turtle. If you are now facing the freshwater turtle tank, please proceed or flow around the corner to your right and towards our alligator exhibit.
The Everglades were once described by famous Florida author and environmentalist Marjorie Stoneman Douglas as a river of grass. In fact, it is a giant ecosystem that at one time spanned from central Florida throughout almost all of South Florida, from Orlando to Florida Bay. Human development and encroachment have caused this massive watershed to become only a fraction of what it once was. In fact, just as the invasive Australian pine caused environmental problems along our beaches, the introduction of the Malaleuca, a tree also found in Australia, has drained and continues to drain the Everglades due to the fact that it consumes more water than any native trees do. In fact, the Malaleuca was planted on purpose to drain the Everglades for humans to build on what would otherwise be uninhabitable swampland. The problem is that Malaleucas are very hard to get rid of and actually multiply when they are cut down or burned. In the Everglades, there are wet and dry seasons. No animal is better adapted to the wet and dry seasons in South Florida than the American alligator, like those you see on display. The alligators that live in the Everglades will spend their time during the wet season, when the water level in the Everglades is high, digging into the bottom of waterways. This may seem unusual, but during the dry season, as most of the water runs out of the Everglades and isn't replenished with rain, the only remaining water is found in these alligator holes. Since fresh water is hard to find during this season, the alligator hole attracts many prey animals looking for a drink, which makes it very easy for the alligator to find its food, since the gator's food literally comes to them. The American alligator was once on the brink of extinction, due primarily to overhunting and habitat loss. But after many decades of breeding programs, restricted hunting laws, and other conservation efforts, the American alligator population is now at a safe level, and the species has been removed from the endangered species list. Without human involvement and help, this species could have gone extinct. It's also important to note that while alligators are very different from crocodiles, South Florida is the only place in the world where both species live side by side in one ecosystem. Can you tell the difference between an alligator and a crocodile? Well, the main difference is in their snout. While an alligator has more of a rounded snout, a lot like the shape of the front of a tennis shoe, the crocodile has a longer snout that almost comes to a point. Alligators also have special pits in their jaws that their teeth fit into when they close their mouths, making it hard to see their teeth. Yet, when a crocodile's mouth is fully closed, almost all of its teeth are still visible. Alligators also tend to be a darker color than the brown and beige-colored skin of the crocodile. Now that you've seen the alligators in action, transform into a water drop and flow on over to the next exhibit to your right that has large trees with long roots growing into the water. These trees are known as mangroves.
In South Florida, as water is pulled by gravity from higher elevations, in the north, towards the lower elevations, nearing sea level to the south, rivers and other waterways eventually lead that water to mangrove estuaries before ending up back in the oceans. The water found in these estuaries is often brackish water, which is fresh water mixing with the salt water from the nearby oceans. The red, white, and black mangroves all have methods of filtering fresh water from the saltier brackish water, or can even expel salt that's absorbed back into the surrounding water. Since you have been a water drop flowing through the rivers and streams, this is the first time that you begin to be salty again, but just a little. The mangrove estuaries are often known as nurseries to countless species of marine animals. Young animals can seek refuge in the maze-like roots of the mangrove trees until they are mature enough to venture out of these estuaries and into the open ocean. Those same roots are also responsible for controlling coastal shoreline erosion during severe storms and hurricanes. Please continue to the right towards the museum's touch tank.
Here, water that once left the ocean now returns after its long trip through the hydrologic cycle. You are now a drop of salt water again. The touch tank is a representation of what is known as a tide pool. As high tides are present along our coast, there are many rock formations that lie well underwater, but when the tides change and the low tide causes the water levels to drop, these rock formations trap water and marine life in tide pools, or at least until the next high tide. Within our touch tank, you will find animals common to these tide pools, such as several species of sea urchins, sea stars, hermit crabs, horseshoe crabs, sea anemones, and various types of shelled gastropods like the queen conch. If you see a museum staff member or volunteer near this tank, don't be afraid to ask them to take out some of these animals for you to touch and see up close. After all, this is the museum's touch tank. Please continue around the front of the touch tank and look into the exhibit on the right.
You are now looking at the museum's sea turtle exhibit. In the tank before you is a juvenile loggerhead sea turtle and is part of our sea turtle conservation program that has been part of the Museum of Discovery and Science for 30 years. There are 8 different species of sea turtles globally, and all 8 of them are either endangered or threatened. 4 of these species are found in the waters off of our Florida coast, and 3 of them, the leatherback, green, and loggerhead sea turtle, all nest right on our beaches. The juvenile loggerhead you see in front of you will stay in the museum until it reaches a certain size, as outlined by state regulations. Once it is large enough, it will be released into a wildlife sanctuary near Sebastian, Florida, where it can hopefully grow to maturity and make its way into the Atlantic Ocean to breed and repopulate. You can take part in our turtle conservation efforts by attending one of the museum's turtle walks. In the months of June and July, turtle walks are offered as educational presentations with led expeditions onto our local beaches where museum guests are able to watch a mother loggerhead sea turtle nest and lay her eggs on the beach after learning everything you need to know about sea turtle conservation and getting a chance to meet our resident loggerhead turtle up close and personal. Space is limited, so book your turtle walk in advance through our reservations department if you would like to participate.
We've now reached the end of our tour. You've just journeyed through the hydrologic cycle, following a drop of salt water from our ocean through the evaporation, condensation, and precipitation process. The water has rained back to land, joining other freshwater in rivers, lakes, streams, aquifers, and the Everglades, slowly making its way through freshwater ecosystems into the brackish water of mangrove estuaries, and eventually coming back to the ocean to start the cycle all over again. The hydrologic cycle is a continuous process, with no real beginning or ending, and one of the most important natural systems on our planet, especially to South Florida. We would like to thank the Florida Division of Forestry for sponsoring this audio tour, and of course you, for taking an interest in the beauty and wonder of Florida's ecoscapes and the hydrologic cycle. We encourage you to visit the rest of the museum's exhibit, including our second floor, which contains hands-on physical and earth space science exhibits. On behalf of the Florida Division of Forestry, and of course the Museum of Discovery and Science, thanks again for joining us, and have a great day of discovery.